Environment, Economic Development, and Agriculture Division for Thursday, May 2nd, 2013, will come to order. Senator Marty, welcome back. Senate File 901 is amended, is in front of us, and it's my understanding that Senator Saxhock has an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have the A43 amendment.
A46. And I think should we have Mr. Fuller explain it?
Sure.
Mr. Fuller, would you like to explain? Or do you want to, Senator Marty, do you want to?
Mr. Chair, either way, this was an amendment we've been talking with utilities and some members of the committee and trying to address concerns that came up last time. And I'm going to go through the bill or Mr. Fuller. Okay, either way.
Go ahead, Mr. Fuller, you want to go ahead and.
Mr. Chair, the A46 amends the A33, which was adopted in our last meeting, so the page and line references are to the A33 amendment. There's one typo, which we should notice right away on 2.22. 215 should be 216, so that be incorporated in the amendment. Page 1, line 3 and 4 of the amendment amend the statement of policy. That's on Section 1, Article 1 of the bill. Instead of saying we must be first, we should be designed, we should aim to be the first. Section 1, 1.6, that new section all the way from 1.6 to the bottom of the page is language that has been in and out of the bill. It just specifies now that we're allowing third parties to be involved in providing generation resources on a small scale, technically they would become public utilities and be exposed to a lot of regulation. They're really not. This makes it explicit. On the next page of the amendment, 2.1, new section 2 is just a technical amendment. One of the articles has to do with distributed generation. It differentially treats utilities, co-ops, and munis, and investor-owned in some way. This section that's being amended says they're all to be covered by the section. This is just boots and straps to make sure that unless we otherwise provide, which we do, that some of the utilities will be treated differently based on whether they're a co-op, muni, or an investor-owned. On 2.8, a technical amendment, just a wrong reference. 2.9 to 2.12 has to do with the distributed generation aggregation of meters. It is excess caution requested by the utilities to make clear when you can aggregate. It already is included in the definition of what is aggregation that's in the bill. Page 2, line 13 of the amendment stretches out from 60 to 90 days, the period in which a utility may respond to a request for aggregation. 2.14 is the value of solar. The made a shell is not what it seems in essence. What the commission has to do is make a series of findings. And once they do, if they do make those findings, then they shall approve the methodology. It said May before, and May was sort of a misfit. There's still discretion with the PUC to not make those findings and not approve the methodology for the value of solar. Page 2.15 has to do with the value of solar methodology and inserts a requirement the commission must approve it. Previously, the department had the authority to develop the methodology for a value of solar. 2.19 is just technical. 2.20 is technical. 2.21 is significant. Later on, you'll see that the Article 3 is deleted from the bill. That was the community solar provision. This replaces the solar provision, and what it does is it requires Xcel only to file a plan with the commission to do some community solar. Community solar meaning that you will have a generation resource that more than one customer will be able to take advantage of and get subscriptions in. It's been negotiated with Xcel, and it doesn't include cooperatives and municipalities, and other investor owns may elect to do this. There's no requirement that they do so. All right, we move on to next is significant from 3.14 to 3.25 is the solar standard. If you look at 3.14, you can see that what that does is delete the standard to a 1% standard, again, only with investor-owned, and the standard comes into play. It must be met at the end of 2025, so it reduces the standard and bumps it out. And then on lines 3.17 to 3.25, these are customer classes the sale of electricity to whom will not be included in computing what the requirement for your solar generation is, nor do they have to pay rates that include any cost of meeting a standard. 3.26, the deletion of the article, is the community solar article. 3.27 is a Made in Minnesota amendment, just clarifies the amount of the SIP payments that must be transferred to the incentive account. 3.29 is part of that. 3.31 amends the Made in Minnesota because the co-ops and the municipalities are no longer financially participating. The language in these lines is no longer appropriate. 3.32 amends the article dealing with certs, which was a separate bill, and it's a technical amendment. It has to do with when an assessing authority is. The underlying bill said after July 1, it should be on or after, because it's intended that next fiscal year they have this authority. 3.33 to 4.2 simply inserts another factor to be considered in a study on conservation. Section on line 4.3, in the last article, there's a requirement for Xcel to engage in some support of solar photovoltaics, and it was restricted to residential installations. That residential is taken out, so it can be other than residential as well now. The last article is a new study that's discretionary with the Legislative Energy Commission on industrial efficiency. They may or may not choose to do it. If they do, detail is set out on what it's supposed to be.
Okay. That's the amendment. Is there any, Senator Marty, any comments?
Mr. Chair, this was, again, Xcel particularly had a number of suggestions. A lot of them are fairly technical and so on. And, again, I'm not thrilled with all the parts of this. I think if we adopt this, we'll have the lowest solar standard of any of the states that have it. But I understand. I mean, that's part of the process, and I appreciate Senator Saxog and others trying to work with us on that. Mr. Chair, I think we still have a solid bill. I think it's very important. I think it can move us forward, and I'd urge support.
Okay, thank you. Any comments, questions from the committee? If there are none, then Senator Saxog moves the A46 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion is adopted. So any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Osborne.
Roll call vote, please.
Okay, so the we have before us then the Senate File 901 as amended.
We have a question.
Senator Ingebretson.
Mr. Chair, we included the amendment. Senator Marty could explain on the last page, 40.2, taking out the residential solar energy. Can you explain that a little bit for me?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, in the earlier version, A33 amendment, we had replaced what was in the earlier bill where there was a solar incentive program statewide funded off of utility bills. This, we replaced it with Xcel had, through the RDF, for their customers only a program. This was the language we had worked out after some conversations with them. Xcel thought it'd be more appropriate to be broader than just residential. I'm fine with that, so this was just to change that.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Senator. And just a general question, Senator, with regards to the study, is there not enough studies? Have we had enough discussions? Do we need to create more? Or are we creating another study here? Or, you know, you have the LEC now that's very active in researching energy and energy assessments, energy, obviously alternative energies. Do we need more? Is that going to be funded in this bill, more dollars, or is it going to give them the taxing authority to be able to raise taxes on ratepayers?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this study would be, if the LEC chooses to do this, They would have been doing it out of their own funds and so on, the funds they do assess. But it's optional for the LEC. It's a design to try and it came from some of the folks in some of the very energy-intensive industries on ways of looking at whether there are more efficient processes available. This is something that's not mandated on the LEC, and I think we'll be discussing whether this is a good thing to do. I think everybody agrees it's a good thing to do. There are lots of people who are maybe doing some of this already in terms of trying to make more efficiency for large consumers.
Thank you.
Senator Osborne.
Senator Marty, in regards to section or Article 4, Section 6, value of on-site energy storage, it says that we're going to be commissioning a study for $100,000 on on-site energy. I'm just sort of trying to figure out if that really has any value. If the private sector, if there was a lot of, I mean, there's certainly a lot of value in trying to create energy storage, especially when we're talking about solar and wind and those type of renewables, to try and level out the available energy on the grid. But I'm just trying to figure out if we're even going to see a value from that $100,000. Will it even move the needle in something that the private sector already, I would assume the private sector would be jumping on this. This would be a great industry and a panacea for our society, and I just don't see why spending $100,000 is really going to move the needle here.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I'm not the expert in this. Senator, this came in the Made in Minnesota bill, but I want to say that the on-site storage will be a huge factor given the fact that renewables are intermittent. Most of them are intermittent in their nature, and on-site storage may be a huge thing. I know in Renville County, just I think yesterday or the day before, they talked about how they're taking the wind turbine farm there and using it to produce hydrogen. It's the biggest such proposal in the country right now. And because hydrogen obviously is one prospect for how we store energy. If you can quickly convert water into hydrogen and then in off hours when renewables or other things are not working, you can... That would be a kind of on-site energy storage type of thing. I think it's early phases for most of this, and this is just to take a look at how we can promote that. I'm not the one who came with that provision, but I think there is great potential for energy storage. I also think the Wright-Hennepin solar peaking plant that the Wright-Hennepin Co-op is putting in place, I think they were talking about some on-site storage there, and I think there is also a huge battery proposal for southwestern Minnesota. I'm not sure the details. But in other words, it's growing technologies. I think this is designed to try and find out what's out there and what we could move ahead with.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It's a good question, Senator Osmick. I seem to recall, Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, is this your initiative, the on-site storage study? I remember seeing a flyer from a company that has these things they can stick in people's homes to store energy. I know that we have some, I think we did an assessment or either that or Excel did on their own dime, I'm not sure which, a big study of off-site storage with this big storage facility. It would be interesting to know what the results of that were. What I think is interesting about this study is finding out for ourselves whether or not this is a cost-effective way to spend conservation and efficiency, SIP dollars. That's what you see on 22.14. You know, is it worthwhile for utilities to go to the effort with ratepayer dollars? Do we realize the return on that investment in a cost-effective way or not? You know, how far along is the technology? How expensive is it? Does it actually store enough energy to make it worthwhile to call it conservation and efficiency under the cost-effective requirements that we have for expending SIP dollars in most cases, other than when we carve them out for other non-related purposes?
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I think this is a good effort, and there's a lot of different ways to store energy. I think the hydrogen is an interesting part of this, but one of the issues that I've always had with, well, some of the renewable wind or now solar, is that the demand is not always there when the sun is shining or the wind is blowing. So you need to figure out a mechanism to hold that energy until the demand is there. The one area that I'm most interested in right now is whether we can use some of this excess electricity and take nitrogen out of the air and make nitrogen fertilizer. They're working on that at the University of Minnesota Morris. It's showing good potential. So along with the hydrogen example that Senator Marty gave, I think that we need to keep looking at this because the renewables will be more effective if we can capture all of it when it's being generated and store it for use when we need it.
Okay. Thank you. Any further comments? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't disagree with the need for some of those studies, but as Senator Skoy mentioned, with the work that's going on at Morris and what have you, I think that there are entities that are better equipped and to conduct those studies than the legislature. And I've never really viewed legislative studies as really successful in evaluating the least effective and or cost-effective method for doing much of anything, to be honest with you. And so I think perhaps we should let the industry are the ones that are and those in the university are those that I think are best equipped to deal with that and to actually produce some meaningful results.
Senator Weber, I think in the language it does say that they're going to be contracting with an expert, so you're going to get what you want.
Yeah. I think, Mr. Chairman, my previous statement will still stand as far as I'm concerned.
Well, maybe it'll change the history of what you're experiencing. is to this point?
Yes,
Senator Mr. Westrom Chair. Was before you. But if it's to this point, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair, first of all, it's the Commissioner of Commerce who will undertake the study. But I just have to reflect on a lot of speeches that were given a couple weeks ago in the evening when we were considering this bill and how, we can't do any of these things in this bill until we study all these things. We need to study. We didn't do anything before, you know, in the REO or the RES until we studied all this stuff. We need to study. We need to study. We need to study. Now we've got some studies to give us some indication. We shouldn't be studying everything. You know, let's other people study, and maybe we'll just cast our drift net out into the water, and we'll catch something along the way. So I'm just reflecting on previous conversations.
It's becoming a really good bill. I guess I want everybody to know, Senator Westrom.
Chair, Senator Marty, you're. Comment about Renville County. I'm just curious, what is it that they're doing? Because I know in Morris, they have been working for a couple of years to get the hydrogen aspect up, and I know they're starting it. They've started it now. They've had some bumps in the road, and this summer they plan to have a actual commissioning or groundbreaking ceremony. But I know they're working out the startup right now. What's going on in Renville? I'm curious.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, it was just in the news about 2 days ago or so. It's a commercial thing that may have been coming out of the University of Minnesota Morris and so on. They are taking the wind generation stuff out there and talking about when there's excess capacity, using that to with new technologies on more efficient ways to convert water into hydrogen, and they're talking about it, I think, not just for energy storage, but also for fertilizer purposes. So I think it's exciting to see. That's a commercial venture. That's not a study. That's something that's moving ahead because of some of this.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, that's going on in Renville?
Renville County. It was just I'll get you a news clipping. I'll send it around.
If you could, that'd be interesting. There folks at the university and in Morris are probably connected, but I'd like to connect them, if not, because I know there's been some unplanned delays with that as well, and I've always said there's no better place to have unplanned delays and research going on than at a university, and that's what they're working at. But It sounds like Renville's doing similar to what's happening in Morris. So,
Mr. Chair, I will forward that to you and other members of the committee.
Senator Osborne.
Thank you.
To Senator Dibble's point, I think I know what he's talking about, is that there were many times where I've said, what's the rush and why are we doing things so fast? And I'll agree with him that we were asking for some studies. I think my point, and it might sound strange, is I can't believe the $100,000 is actually going to produce a study that has any actual results or actually has value. That almost is to the point of saying, why aren't we spending $1 million or $10 million? I guess I shouldn't have those words come out of my mouth. But what I am saying is I just don't see the number being something that's going to provide something of value at that level. So that was my point.
Okay. Any other comments, Senator Rood?
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, maybe you can address Article 10 on the integrated resource planning. I have some concerns about what this means for the PUC decision-making. You know, currently, when they look at a new large facility, they look at cost and system reliability and baseload. And it appears that we're now going to take and look at greenhouse gas reduction goals and solar energy standards that are elevated directly to this baseload costs and need. And I'm not quite sure that we should be comparing a politically determined solar energy standard to elevate that to the standards that we're using now on cost and reliability and baseload standards. So could you just address how we're changing that in Article 10?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Rood, the existing language, as you see, is that they are supposed to push for non-renewable energy facilities unless it's demonstrated it's not in the public interest. This is more a clarification of that. In doing so, it should be determining if it's moving forward on those goals.
Senator Rood.
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, but those goals, what are those goals, are based on something we're deciding here today, not necessarily on something that's scientifically out there. We're just arbitrarily doing that today. And I think the standards that the PUC looks at right now have been used for a long time. And I think this is more of a political judgment than it is an actual scientific judgment on the facility being built.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rood, again, the commission is making the determination of what's in the public interest. We're just telling them to do that, to look at what the goals are. And again, the only one of these that's changed in the bill is the 1% by 2025 under the line 28 there.
Okay. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe to Senator Scoy and Senator Dibble, Article 13, which talks about giving the local units of government the ability to bond property owners for renewable efficiency projects and paid back by property tax assessments. A couple of questions. These would be special projects, obviously, giving the local units of government now the opportunity to tax for energy initiatives, as well as I'm wondering if the property tax assessment issue was ever talked about, Senator Scoy. Maybe it has in the past.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this is the first I've seen of it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Marty.
The PACE program that this is amending is one that I think Edina and a number of communities have been doing. It's existing. It's not a property tax assessment. This is if a homeowner wants to do some energy improvement assessments on the home, geothermal or something else like that, that they would have. Right now, I think the law is basically a 10-year payback. And the communities have been allowed to put these on. In other words, if they work with the homeowner and the homeowner says, we'd like to finance it through this program, you could assess it on – it's the homeowner's consent to do this. This is basically changing it from 10-year to 20-year, and the second change is simply requiring it to be cost-effective energy improvements. I think I would describe as technical, but it's not a property tax. It's simply allowing those communities who are voluntarily running these programs to deal with homeowners who want to make these improvements and allowing them basically to finance him over 20 years rather than 10 years.
Senator Skoy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Marty, as you indicated, this is current law, and this really is just a financing mechanism so that communities can utilize the ability of a local unit to have lower interest rates. Am I gathering that?
Correct. Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Mr. Chair, yeah, we did have a presentation of this bill, and this really isn't being used by residents and by homeowners. It's being used by commercial industrial property owners.
Senator Marty, I mean.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, it may well be more now. The trouble was the 10-year financing was made, especially residential-sized ones, they were paybacks of more like 15 years or so to make it cost-effective for people and the communities that were trying to do this. I think they were hoping to do this with residential, but they can't really put it together with the financing unless they have something like this change.
Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Marty, in Article 2, Section 10, lines 10.9 through 10.14, I'm a little troubled. I understand why members of the committee would like to have certain operations exempted, taconite mining and paper mills being specifically listed. You know, we have a lot of industries in the state of Minnesota that won't be exempted from this. Medtronic in Senator Scalzi's district, you know, Target stores are everywhere. We've got very large employers producing large amounts of revenue and producing many jobs. And in this particular section, it's a little troubling. It seems like we're carving out certain individuals or certain industries to be exempt while others are not. I hate to use the old hackneyed phrase winners and losers, but it sure does look like that. Can you respond to that?
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Osmick, there are two things. One that's designed to address is one is certain types of industries. The paper industry will tell you they spend more on their electrical power than on their wood fiber. They spend more on it than they spend on labor costs, I believe. In other words, it's a huge portion of their budget. They're huge users of it. And the other thing is that a couple of the utilities, as we understand, are all different. Like Minnesota Power, I think they say about 60% of their load is like 10 customers. It's those, in other words, the taconite plants and the paper mills are well over half of their entire energy consumption. So it's the nature of both the energy intensity and the fact that it's a very heavy percentage of it. But they are very large. I mean, any large facility is going to be a bigger user of energy, but these are very, very energy-intensive industries, and that plus the fact that they're on a relatively small utility.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Not to that point. I'll pass for right now.
Okay. Oh, you're passing?
Just for now, yeah.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, back to that PACE program. Going to 20 years, what's the push or motivation for that? And I think you've kind of answered that, but can you restate that for us?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I wish I could recall which communities it is, but I think Bloomington and Edina and some others have, and they've just said that they are not able to use it well for residential and other things because the payback period is too short. The nature of these huge investments, for a homeowner, huge investments, the payback, I think they need it, and perhaps Mr. Hinkle can.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom.
Say your name for the record.
My name is Lynn Hinkle. I'm a policy director for the Minnesota Solar Energy Industry Association. This is a technical fix. When the legislation was passed in 2010, it clearly stated in 216C-436 that in the event that an entity like Edina or another jurisdiction decided to enter into this program, that it could issue revenue bonds, not GO bonds, revenue bonds with a repayment of 20 years. We cross-referenced the special assessment statute 429-101, but didn't go in and fix the constraint of the special assessments being collected in 10 equal payments. So what this is doing is aligning two pieces of existing legislation so that jurisdictions can more effectively use the 20-year payment that's already in statute in 216C436.
Mr. Nichols, Senator Marty, I remember some of those discussions going on, and I know there was discussion about not stretching it out so far that the project is probably defunct or obsolete or not working anymore, and then you've got a homeowner sitting with an assessment on something that's not that's beyond its life. And so I'm not sure I'm recalling your exact. I think the 10 years was with some intention of trying to find that middle ground, so you don't have homeowners getting into something that they believe is going to last longer than it is, or maybe it doesn't work like they thought it was going to work, and it would also bring forth the most commercially ready projects rather than having people saddled with assessments on something that might not work. And because once in a while we hear of those situations. So that's how I recall the discussion and where 10 years came from. So I'm a little concerned that we stretch it out to 20 years if we're worried that the savings is going to take 20 years to recover. You know, that's some of the reason things don't get off the ground. You know, there's projects that in 5 years or 3 years you can recover the cost, and that is a more viable way to go. But 10 seemed to cover it at the time, as I recall. But I just would caution that we don't go down the road, and if something's not working after 12 years, we've seen the situation where lots of people walk from their properties if they're underwater with their mortgage or other lose their job, and all of a sudden we've now got cities sitting with assessments that can't get paid as well. So, Mr. Chair and Representative or Senator Scoy, this might be something the Tax Committee wants to look at a little closer, because it could actually have a wider net of effect than what we're thinking about here today.
Mr. Chair, two things. One, most of these things like geothermal actually tend to have longer warranties than furnaces and a lot longer than 20 years. And number two, I was not heavily involved in this. I remember when the discussions were going on about this, but as Mr. Hinkle mentioned, the program was set up with 20-year revenue bonds that cities could use. It sounds like this was just a technical glitch that they forgot that the special assessment law that they were using to collect the money could only be done over 10 years, not 20 years. So I think he's right in that if it was based on 20-year revenue bonds, then it is purely a technical fix, and it was not a decision that they couldn't. But these projects should last a lot longer than 20 years, and again, that's the homeowner's decision. If I choose to put something like this in and finance it either whether through these 20 annual assessments or however, it seems to me that that's my decision, and I may goof on it, but we don't want to be putting people into foolish positions, but this is 20 years is not unreasonable for a long-term capital investment.
Senator Dibble, to this point.
Mr. Chair. The PACE legislation wasn't mine, but I was on the Energy Committee in the Senate when it was passed, and I have a completely different recollection from Senator Westrom's, that it was conceptualized as Mr. Hinkle has described it. And it's really not, you know, the amortization schedule and the payback period and the technology and the warranties and the financing really isn't for us to decide. I mean, that's something that the homeowner, in conjunction with the energy service company and the city, can figure out. You know, what we have is an artificial constraint here, a technical glitch, something that didn't get picked up at the time, and we're just simply making a fix. So I don't know why we're getting so involved in this discussion. This is an established program, and we need to fix it so it works appropriately.
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Marty, I first of all just want to thank you. I know that you've worked hard on this. I want to go back to something that Senator Osmond touched on a little bit, and I have no problem. I understand that mining and paper bills are big energy users, but I would also just like to ask Senator Marty that he would consider, you know, we have a lot of ethanol plants around the state, and I think in Senator Tomasoni's conference committee later on in the ag bill, we passed the next generation of renewable fuels. And I think it's great that we, you know, you are willing to cut out co-ops and the munis, which are serviced by many of those ethanol plants. But there's still a handful that will be covered under the investor owns. And so I think, Senator Marty, have you given any consideration? I don't want to offer an amendment or carve this bill up today, but is that something that you'll give some consideration to moving forward?
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sparks, I'd be happy to talk with you further about it. The one thing I'd say is that, first of all, I think most of the power of the ethanol plants, my understanding is coming not from electric consumption but through natural gas and so on. But, again, and I think they're far smaller users than these other folks, but I'm happy to talk with you.
Senator Root.
And Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Sparks, for that. And to that point, I'm wondering Senator Marty, you spoke about how the businesses that are exempted from him, from this bill, they get maybe 50% of their energy from this. So, and so I'm wondering if in the bill that there are any standards for the business that are exempted. I mean, is there we talked about if 50% of their power or 25% of their power. So are there standards for the business that are exempt, and if there are standards for businesses to be exempt, is there a mechanism in the bill for companies to prove that they meet those standards and for them to be exempted also? Because I think we have a lot of companies that may, if we had a standard for business exemptions, you know, they may meet that. You know, we've got 3M and Medtronic, IBM, Crystal Sugar, Cargill, General Mills. I mean, there's a whole list of them that may feel that they should be exempted too, and maybe if we have a standard for business exemptions and a mechanism for them to apply for that, it might be a better standard.
Senator Root, I think Mr. Fuller can maybe address that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Root, if you turn to page 3 of the A46 amendment and look at the exemptions there on line 19 and 20, you'll see that with respect to clause 1, there's reference to a large custom facility. These folks have, and this mirrors the SIP law. Actually, the 20 megawatt is a SIP, Conservation Improvement Program, standard. So for these folks, there is a process. They would have already been identified. We know who they are. And this is a subset of those people, so it's actually a smaller exception. With respect to clause number 2, the only other exclusion, the standard is 10 megawatts. And again, the utility that serves that customer would know that. So that's how these things are determined, is there electric demand from their servicing utility.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, the other point I want to keep in mind with the solar standard is that we're talking, well, first of all, the standard is very minimal here. I think it's very important to have a standard, and I think it's helpful to have this, even if it's less than I and I think lots of others like to have. But I think it's important to keep in mind that energy costs, in a lot of ways, not related to solar, may be going up faster. This bill has a rider for Otter Tail for a Big Stone plant for their pollution retrofit equipment, $489 million. That's a 15% increase for their customers. That's for coal plants. We're having huge increases in these other things. We're talking about 1% solar standard by 2025. And yes, the chart that I think was handed out again showed if we were to do a current cost, if we were to do a percent standard now, it would be a 0.33% increase, 1/3% increase. For a 0.5% thing, this is 1%, but that's over 12 years, and at the rate solar prices are falling, it may well be the cheapest power they can buy at that time. We're talking about, I think Xcel is currently working at, I think it's 5 new gas-powered peaking plants. We're talking about more expenses in any of the forms of energy, and we're using a very small measured portion here. So I think the idea that these are going to cost more and the other forms are going to get cheaper, I think just look at all the rate cases you see filed because of the new environmental standards, the costs of other things going up. I don't think it's fair to keep saying that this is the expensive power source. It right now does not compete with it. That's why we're trying to get foot in the door, to get the industry started, to get it moving, so that the costs continue to come down as they have been falling.
Okay. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Senator Westrom got his hand. He was just saying he didn't have his.
You didn't go ahead.
Oh, okay. He didn't have your amendment in your file there. Senator Marty, I'm cramming my mind to find out, to remember whether we talked about this in the first meeting with regards to hydropower credits. Has there been any consideration at all given to that for the companies yet? I know that didn't and wasn't included in the 2007 standards that we, I should say, the 2007 mandates that we put on the power companies. Has that been reconsidered at all,
Senator Marty? Chair Senator Ingebrigtsen, we're not starting to count things that are already in operation. I know, like, I think Missouri River is taking an existing hydro dam in Iowa and putting converting it to hydropower. That would count in the renewable energy standards. Those things, in other words, hydro is counted when they're putting new hydro in. The thing is, most of the hydro has already been in place. I mean, I think Minnesota Power has a significant amount of it, and that's been going on for a long time. So we're talking about new things being added, and yes, that would be if they're putting in new hydro.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Marty. I know that we have handouts here, and I hear a lot of talk about how many jobs that this industry is going to create for Minnesota with this new industry. And I know that in Article 1 we talk about Minnesota being the first state to use only renewable energy. And I wonder if there's any thought to how many jobs that we lose in the non-renewable energy sector.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rood, the economy is constantly moving and shifting and changing. I think the big picture to look at is that one of the things about renewable energy is right now in many ways some portions of the industry are more expensive than other power. I think Xcel just told me the other day they actually had several proposals out there for wind power under 3 cents a kilowatt hour. Folks are coming to them with. But the biggest thing to keep in mind over the long haul is right now Minnesota, compared to our 18 billion, 19 billion year state general fund revenue, 13 billion is how much we as a state spend on energy exports, shipping money to other states and other countries for oil, for natural gas, for fossil fuels. That's money that leaves the economy. The money here is jobs. I mean, if you're paying more, a little bit more per kilowatt hour for wind or solar or whatever, you're not paying anything for the fuel. The fuel is free. What you're paying for is the jobs, the businesses, the installation, the maintenance, the repair, all of that stuff, those are jobs. In other words, we're converting money that's going into other states and countries to buy fuel to bring in here for one-time use, or we're using it for ongoing. Yes, there are some jobs there's some very many jobs in the existing industry. What I'm saying is per kilowatt hour, per anything else, what you're basically doing when you're converting this is shifting from purchase of fuel to jobs to operate, maintain, build, install renewable energy. It is a huge net increase per kilowatt hour. Per kilowatt, you're creating more jobs, you're spending less money out of the state.
Senator Rood.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, I guess it's all in how you count, but and I apologize for not bringing the study with me, but there is a new study out from countries who have gone this direction, and they've shown that for every one renewable job, they've lost 2.5 jobs in the non-renewable sector. And so I'm very concerned as we go forward with this on the job loss, because after all, that we are a jobs committee. And I would hate to see the net gain of this bill be a net loss in jobs.
Okay. Senator Westrom.
Chair, Senator Marty, you talked about the Otter Tail Big Stone plant. What happens if that language isn't in here? And as you mentioned, you're talking a 15% rate hike to customers. And what happens if that's not in here?
Mr. Chair, if the rider is not in here, they will have to wait a couple more years before they can assess it, and it will be a higher impact on their customers, which is why they were hoping we'd put it in.
So, Senator Marty, the irony.
Senator Westrom, I think Mr. Fuller has said.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, I may have confused you. That is in the bill.
Yeah, okay. No, I understand that. The reason I'm asking is that's my territory, and I'm hearing even from good liberals out there that are not very happy with a 15% rate increase. And I guess that's my question, but it's also my point. The new environmental regulations that you've talked about, this is a direct cost. A few years ago, five, six, 7 years ago, they started, we're going to expand this plant to Big Stone 2. And as I recall the numbers, it was about $1 billion to build this Big Stone 2, more than doubling the capacity of the plant. And in that, they could have fixed up Big Stone 1 so the environmental smokestack and what was emitted from Big Stone 1 and 2 would be less than what's in Big Stone 1. Now we've got nearly $500 million being assessed to the customers. No new power coming out of the plant because Big Stone 2 has been scrapped because of environmental pushback. And in order to get a cleaner emission standard, we now have customers paying a 15% increase and no new power from Big Stone 2. I point this out because I think we need to tie these knots together or make these loops, because there was a more practical way for the customers to benefit than what we're doing here. It's another reason that this bill has maybe some problems, because the customers in Otter Tail territory are not happy about a 15% increase. And that's $500 million, Mr. Senator Marty and committee members. So I just want to point that out. I'd be happy for any response you have, yes. Senator Marty, or any thoughts if there's a different way to do this.
Sure. Mr. Chair, again, this goes, I would say, to the point that when we're talking about the cost of solar, we should be talking about the cost of alternatives, too. And Mr. Lawtug from Otter Tail is here, and yes, and I'm not sure if he wants to come up, but if he wants to explain the project, I mean, it is a very expensive thing. And if we don't put it in the bill, their concern is their ratepayer is going to have an even bigger hit later on. So it was their request to put it in. If you want him to come up, I think he can. But I think the point is it is very expensive. All we're doing here is allowing them to start collecting earlier than the law would otherwise allow them to recover it.
Senator Gibbelhardt.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to necessarily belabor the point on Big Stone, but we have PUC, we have the deputy commissioner here, we have Mr. Lawtug. I don't think the entire story of Big Stone is environmental issues. You know, investors withdrew from that project. You know, there was a consortium of
folks were going to buy that power. They withdrew for a variety of reasons, and so the financing fell apart. And also, you know, I think some of the improvements made do result in more power coming out of Big Stone. So it would be interesting to hear what the facts are. Okay. If anyone wants to illuminate us on why this assessment and why the big Stone project didn't happen, if we want to take the time. But
we,
you know, statements are made that aren't actually
Mr.
true.
Mr. Chair, to respond to that, and maybe somebody should add comments, but I know some of the partners that were pulling out met with me, and the EPA was coming down with new regulations in about 2009 with the new administration that came in. The state had been going heavily at fixing global warming, which this year's evidence we probably overcorrected. But but I mean, those were big reasons that parties pulled away, because the standards were ever changing, and the mission and the message that was being sent is, frankly, we don't want more coal energy, therefore we're going to just keep hammering away until it's not feasible. I mean, that's my paraphrase, but that's what was. And when you start having partners pull out of financial deals that are as big as $1 billion, it certainly does change the equation. But we could have had all of this fixed up. Now, granted, I think there's other things they could have done, and I had conversations with investors on some other areas with wind generation that could have been added into the project. So some of those ideas were not taken and perhaps could have helped facilitate the project. But that was a big reason that I was told when partners started pulling out.
Thank you, Brinson.
Mr. Chair, we don't need to relitigate the whole larger Big Stone project issue today, but maybe we can get a fact sheet from folks who are more knowledgeable sent around to us.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and then I'll just finish with this. And the only reason I'm going to go there is because Senator Marty, I'm not going to ask any questions, but Senator Marty brought in the national jobs and national exportation of energy and this and that, and you know, in the most recent November election, I do recall somebody talking about nationally over $500 billion being spent on green jobs in this country, and it just kind of, I guess we're philosophically different. I know that two-thirds of the people that voted against the 2007 energy standards are sitting at this table right here. That wasn't many of us, but two-thirds of us are here. And we knew at that time, I think, that this was an issue that was of bipartisan support, supported by a Republican governor, moving forward to help solve, if you will, the global warming issue that everybody seems to be hiding behind climate change now. I guess that's the new term. And green jobs is even in our statutes. And at the last meeting, I asked the folks, how our big river system is, if it's better now than it was before, and it is, and you know, I think we're doing some good things. But I guess it all comes down to just what exactly are we willing to pay for when we've got other strains on our state budget, and nursing homes, for instance, just keep popping up in my mind. We're not taking care of those people that did so darn good a job taking care of you and I, but yet we're still off and running, spending lots of money on trying to solve the global issue here in Minnesota. In Minnesota, kind of frankly, alone, we have the highest energy standards in the country, or at least one of them. So when I sit back and think of the amount of money that we are spending and where that those dollars could, half of those dollars could be spent a little more wiser, I still go back to my vote in 2007 I guess I've been deemed the polluter ever since, but then the bottom line is I should remind everybody there's an Earth Day today. In fact, 20 miles south of here, there's enough snow falling to take out the energy in Cannon Falls. So global warming is is an issue that we certainly in passing in the elevators talk about. And I think we're just on a cycle, and I think, quite frankly, we're moving down the wrong direction here, folks, and we should be spending our dollars in more better priorities. And we have priorities that we have to take care of, and let's just stay on this course that we're on right now and see what happens. But if we overspend, folks, it's going to be all for naught. And I'll leave with that, and I'm certainly not going to support the bill.
We're now on the fourth hour of testimony on this bill, so I think it's appropriate that we vote. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Saxhog moves Senate File 901 as amended. Senator Rood, last comment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And Senator Marty, I want to thank you because I know you've worked with a lot of people on this bill and you've really changed it dozens and dozens of times. But I will tell you that I really can't get past Article 1 because you make a huge assumption that this body has decided that Minnesota wants to be a renewable energy-only state. And I think that makes a big assumption that I don't particularly find true. I think Minnesota wants to be an energy-balanced state and to look at all forms of energy and look for a really good balance in the state of Minnesota. So, Senator Marty, I can't support your bill today because I don't think this is good policy, and I think we need more balance in the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Clerk, take the roll. Yes.
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 Pass.
No.
Yes.
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 Yep.
No.
No.
There are 8 votes for and 5 against. The motion passes and will be referred to the Finance Committee.
Thank you
all
Mr.
very
Chair,
much, and I appreciate all the work here. And meeting adjourned. Mm.